Biotech companies are desperately seeking a vaccine for COVID-19. How can tech help, and what parts should not be rushed? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. The new coronavirus is now officially a pandemic, and researchers are speeding to discover, test, and deploy a vaccine. Some hope that breakthrough biotechnology and artificial intelligence can get us there faster. Michael Greeley is co-founder and general partner with Flare Capital in Boston, an investment fund that specializes in biotech. He says he's wary of using AI to speed up drug testing. That could be dangerous. But he says the tech does have real-world uses right now.
We know what populations are most at risk, which is the elderly and people with comorbidities. We can begin to very aggressively isolate those people, if possible. And so we can begin to triage the population. And that's the other promise of AI. If you're looking at real-world evidence across populations, you can begin to see signals in data sets way earlier than we were historically. So our healthcare system should be able to react or proactively begin to intervene in places that we think could be potential hotspots.
Right. How far away are we? I'm not trying to skip past the current crisis. How far afield are solutions that could prevent or slow down, you know, the next novel coronavirus?
There's a dynamic here that you'll never get ahead of it fully because the viruses mutate quickly. They have unknown origins. So it's hard to develop therapeutics or vaccines anticipating a certain strain of virus that we don't know exists. So to some extent, we're always going to be in somewhat of a reactive mode. And the business of vaccines is you know, you use it once and you're presumably going to be fine from future infections. So there's no ongoing commercial relationship, which sounds terrible in this moment of crisis to talk about it. But that's the fundamental dichotomy of that industry and why I think we're kind of woefully unprepared for these novel viruses that come up.
What do you think that this means for the future? There's been a lot of investment in biotech over the last couple of years. Do you expect that to increase or for the trajectories to change at all?
Given the advancements in AI and our understanding of molecular pathways, I think the overarching dollars investment heading into biotech will continue to be very robust. I think in the very near term, within our firm, we literally can't do business. We've shut the firm down. We can't meet entrepreneurs. And so I worry that there's going to be this air bubble that moves through the system, and it could be a few quarters, it could be into the fall, where, you know, profound early stage investment will drop very dramatically. And, you know, over the arc of time, does that have a long lasting impact? Probably not. But in the next couple of years, you'll see that in drug development pipelines, you know, over the next 2 to 4 years, where there'll be this kind of blackout period where not a lot of investment was made and not a lot of interesting innovation was discovered. But I don't think this fundamentally changes investor sentiment towards biotech. And in fact, you know, if this is more fleeting, I think people will say, hey, there's a lot of opportunity here to figure out these problems, and it may actually increase investment dollars.
Right. Although I want to go back to what you just said about this idea that over the next couple of years that there will be opportunities missed. In the space you're talking about, missed opportunities are potentially diseases not cured or treated, right?
That's right. That's right. I don't necessarily dispute that. I also think there'll be another silver lining, which is we'll come to further respect the power of AI in multiple facets. And one area that we spend a lot of time thinking about is real-world evidence, RWE. Are we going to be able to see, would we have seen activities in China in September and October, for instance, that would have alerted us months and months in advance before we had to start reading about it in the New York Times in mid-January? And so as you know, our ability to kind of analyze non-traditional data sets, AI will enable an early intervention, which is to begin to interrogate, inquire about things that don't look right. And it's pretty clear, had we known and had our administration taken steps in December and January, we wouldn't be sitting here in early March saying we're shutting the country down. You know, we might have been able to do things more aggressively earlier to preempt what will look like Italy instead of other parts of the world.
Michael Greeley is co-founder and general partner of the biotech investment firm Flare Capital. Much of the funding and development of COVID-19 vaccine is likely to happen privately. The $8 billion coronavirus funding bill passed by the U.S. government includes just $800 million for the National Institutes of Health, which does vaccine research and development, but is chronically underfunded. And now for some related links. CNN has a good piece on the nearly two decades of underfunding the National Institutes of Health, which leads directly to funding shortages for universities, research institutions, and medical schools, leaving development to happen reactively in a crisis, which is what's happening now, and not for nothing, mostly at for-profit companies who will have to make back their money by charging for their drugs. The medical tech publication Stat News has a piece on a drug development company called Inovio that made $208 million in a stock maneuver because its share price has been so high based on its promise of a so far untested COVID-19 vaccine. But the piece goes on to say there are dozens of companies working on vaccines. Others have more funding, including government funding, and this company might not be able to pull it off at all. We should be very wary of any rush to develop and test vaccines, no matter what, but especially when large profits might be involved. For example, Moderna, a drug discovery company that has lots of funding from the government and the Gates Foundation, is moving ahead with vaccine testing on humans without first testing its drug on animals, which is definitely not how things are usually done. And here's what else we're watching in tech. Schools are rapidly closing all over the country, workers are being sent home, and America is starting to realize that maybe the internet is a utility after all. The FCC has asked ISPs and telecom providers to commit to keeping service on, even if people are late on their bills, waive late fees for people and businesses, and open Wi-Fi hotspots to everyone. Democratic members of the commission said the request should also include getting rid of data caps. And credit to the Make Me Smart Facebook group for this next story. If you, like me, want something educational for your child who's home from school, or you just need some high-class entertainment while you're cooped up in the house, Google Arts and Culture is working with 500 museums and galleries to offer virtual tours that go beyond just an online collection of photos. It's more like street view for walking around museums like the Van Gogh in Amsterdam or the National Gallery in London. Fast Company has a nice roundup of that and other options for an at-home culture fix. And we're all still working on our remote work etiquette. Here are today's video conference do's and don'ts. On Twitter, Storage Diva says, do include your canine in your Zooms. This is a stressful time and dogs make people happy. Larry Garfield says, among other things, don't feel pressure to turn the video on. Most meetings don't actually need it. And all of us say, and will continue to say every single day, do mute yourself when you're not talking. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.